All right, let's call this EMAP policy meeting to order at 1:30. And do we have a forum, Mr.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Audience participation. We do have audience participation today. And Carson Barnes is here. Carson wants to talk to us about finding transportation system management approaches for communities, I believe. And I'm going to let you speak now. Mr. Barnes, there's going to be 5 minutes to speak.
Okay, thank you very much.
And you can address everyone here, and go from there. You can stand up, you can sit, whatever you want to do.
My name is Carson Barnes. I'm a resident of Akron. And I don't want to spend part of my 5 minutes telling you about my background, but I have worked for the California State Department of Transportation. I've worked for the City and County of San Francisco, City of Berkeley, and City of Kent. And I do have a master's degree from Cal in transportation, and I did work for a state agency. My concern here, my primary focus, and I was born in Akron, mind you, so I have a perspective of history, and my concern is that over the last 5 years, the city of Akron has allowed to be built 2 million square feet of parking deck space in the city that focuses around three major institutions, University of Akron, very beneficial to us. City Hospital, SUMA, great employer, significant number of jobs, and Children's Hospital as well, burn unit. My wife at age 12 or 13 was a candy striper who volunteered for Children's Hospital. We lived not too far away from Children's Hospital there on Bishop Street when I was in junior high school. Problem is that the areas have been impacted, the neighborhoods have been impacted significantly, as one would expect in terms of just the sheer number of parts. You've got basically 10,000 more cars coming or built for automobiles to utilize around those three institutions. The question is to what extent are these institutions mitigating the impacts of transit and transportation and parking? My conclusion is that not enough is being done. You've got the Ohio Rideshare program basically focusing on carpool. Of course, we've got Metro and Transit that provides alternatives, but nothing like employer-sponsored van pooling is not even being suggested by any city organization, agency, department. Mr. Jason Segedy says to me that we can't make people carpool, we can't make people vanpool. Certainly not. We can't do that. They have to make the decision themselves. But in lieu of, or at the same time that you're approving these parking decks that are expensive, and I would claim that are ruining views that are in some way, I would say, taking affordable housing, turn them into parking lots, parking decks. You can see around any of these, the three institutions that I named. And ultimately, the environmental degradation of livable neighborhoods compatible with these institutions. And what I'm suggesting is that there should be discussion of alternatives to riding alone. First of all, carpool, ride sharing is good. Van pooling should be an option. And dealers like Vanderveer, for example, have vans available through lease. A discussion of the benefits of the subsidy of van pooling could be made by a, say, an independent broker to the personnel departments or responsible people to delineate options for these institutions in lieu of their continued expansion. And I should say, I've lived in Akron time to time since 1948. My mom born here in 29, and we've seen the depreciation of our neighborhoods at the benefits of some of these institutions, I'd say. They're not designed with nature in coordination with. I don't feel that's my take on it. And as I look through here in your budgeting, you spend $50,000 in the next 3 years in carpooling. There's no discussion at all of van pooling. And you have a charge to mitigate the impacts of some of the projects that are identified here. It's not even 1% of your budget. Not even make 1% of your budget. So I think a better job could be done in developing alternatives to the constant expansion of parking facilities around these institutions. And realistically, minorities are being affected. Schools, I've looked right around City Hospital, two gone. Grade schools, Henry, probably never heard of it, you know. Central, gone, University of Akron. I could go on. Restaurants, businesses, neighborhood shops, and the feeling of a neighborhood are gone. Cannot be realized again. So I'm not going to take too much of your time. I have asked Mr. Prater, through Mr. Segedy, through our councilman, Russ Neal, first through the councilman, Russ Neal, if we could have baseline information on how an origin and destination study, and one has not been done here in Akron for 15 years, and I don't know why. The data is in Columbus, and it wouldn't take too much to produce it. Mr. Segedy has ignored our request. I even went through the law department, Freedom of Information Act, to see if that information could be gathered. And they say it's nothing that they have access to. So he could, on his own, say, deny producing such a report. I don't know what's would be the detriment. It's information. And my councilman requested it. For some reason, his response to me is, if we can't make people ride here. No, you can't. Also, I wanted to say that the development of park and ride lots around here is almost nil to none. And that could be done not only by acquisition of land and the building of park and ride lots, but you could have a coordination with some of these malls and commercial developments that are near freeway interchanges. The state could provide insurance. I was the implementer of that program for nine counties in the San Francisco Bay Area. They have a network of about 40 different parking lot lots. Without making a conclusion that more than half the trips here, journey to work, are coming from suburban areas. People do not live in Akron. They work here. And they don't use their cars during the day. So I think that the AMATS and the state could do a much better job of coordinating that. That's my view. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
More
about
listening.
Anyone
to
have
me
any questions, comments? All right. We get to sit through the meeting now, so I hope you enjoy it. All right, getting on with our agenda, we have the minutes of September 20th, 2018 for approval. I need a motion for approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
Mark Harrison.
Thank you. Any comments? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, next we're going to go to our staff reports. We'll start with Curtis on our financial progress report.
Thank you. Attachment 3A, you see we're about a third of the way through the year. We spent about 26% of our budget, so we're in good financial shape. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? All right, we're going to need a motion for the financial progress report.
Yeah. So moved.
Make a second.
Second.
Okay. Are there any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries on the financial progress report. Stay with you, Curtis, on the technical progress report.
All right, so on the technical progress, I'll try to be brief. A couple things. Last week, there was a report that had been requested by Congress, by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, looking at the highway system and the Highway Trust Fund. What that study concluded was that about $70 billion annually was needed for a federal system to bring our national highway system up to a state of good repair. Their main recommendation was raising the federal gas tax and also tolling to basically make that gap. We're collecting about $40 million a year right now, so that would be about a $30 million increase. You know, I think we vaguely offhand say like a penny equals about $1 billion a year, give or take a penny, $1 billion. So 10 cents gets you 10 billion, you know, 20 cents gets you 20 billion. So, I mean, that'd be something as significant as like a 30 cent tax increase. You know, there was some hope after this. Now, thank God the election season is over. There was some hope that this might provide a bipartisan approach to infrastructure. That was some of the things that I saw leading up to now that we have two houses divided, although it seems like that has already started to calm down a little bit. I haven't heard as much recently about an effort for bipartisan highway bill. I know the interesting thing is that the Transportation Infrastructure Committee is in the House, which is now Democrat controlled, and you know the comments that we've seen from those folks is that we want to pay for a highway bill with real money. Real money, I assume, meaning money that's actually collected here and not just a borrowed from other funds. So, you know, again, I think 2 years ago we thought maybe we were on the precipice of a big highway bill, and then it just kind of faded into oblivion. So, not keeping our hopes up. And as you know, we get we'll be good through 2020 with our federal spending anyway. Another thing is Dave's going to talk a little bit about some of the changes ODOT's making because their money is starting to get a little tight. One thing I just wanted to point to is that when we've looked at ODOT's books over the next 2020 and 2021 and some of the cuts they're making across the board, one of the big increases in their budget has been the debt service now for the bonding of the turnpike. And as that debt service payments go up, there's a little bit less money to play with. And so we're actually looking at some cuts potentially even to MPO programs, not majorly significant, but not necessarily real positive either. So Dave's going to talk a little bit about that from the state side. Two things I want to talk about locally. So one, I know some of you know this, but I wanted to make sure, reiterate that we can be helpful. We have two types of counters in our office. One is a video camera that we can put up about 40 feet in the air, videotape intersections, videotape pedestrians, bicyclists, whatever. It's really great for areas that are hard to count, and we can do it any time of year. So if there's something that, you know, you've got residents that are concerned or complain, you know, that's a great resource that we are happy to bring out any time of year. The other type of counter we have is a radar counter, and what that's actually able to provide is speed data. So we can get the 85th percentile speed as well as the max speed. And So again, if there are locations for your communities where you're either receiving complaints about speed or you're curious about a count or anything, really all year round we can get those out to you guys and process that data pretty quickly. We found that it's really fascinating as we've looked at some of these things just to get an idea of what the 85th percentile speed of an area, which is what basically the 85th is, you know, only 15% will cross that speed. But I think it's kind of would be helpful, I know, for those of us, you know, that there's people speeding down my street or there's this or there's that. You know, our counters do have that ability to do that stuff, and we are happy to put them out even on the local system. It doesn't have to be, you know, a project that's just a federal system.
What do those look like? Are they easily observable?
So the radars are about this big, right, and like a box.
Yeah, okay.
And they strap onto a light pole, and they don't have to be more than, you know, 4 or 5 feet off the ground. And
do they display the speed?
No, they're just white boxes. So they're just, and it's shooting out, you know, basically doing the same as like a police officer.
That's obvious.
Yeah.
In terms of tipping people off.
Right, exactly. And so, we can collect the ADT, the average daily traffic, and we can also collect the speed. So, yeah.
Can you collect multiple lanes of traffic?
Yes, you can. Now, if you get 4 lanes, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually when we get 4 lanes, we actually use 2 counters. So one looks and gets 2 lanes, and the other looks and gets 2 lanes. But if it's just a, you know, state route 303, you'll get both.
I was thinking of 14.
Yeah.
Coming in.
14 might be a challenge just because it's
so
7, 8 lanes. But, you know, yeah. But we might have to get creative on that one because that one, I don't know, Dave, would you think it could do?
The counters will only do 2 lanes in the same direction. If you have more than 2 lanes in the same direction, we have to use something else. The MyoVision or a traditional count.
The MyoVision is the camera.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah.
How about vehicle occupancy? The number of people who ride in a vehicle. That is, of course, that would be an average. Can your machine determine?
They cannot.
No,
they don't have that.
How is that done?
That would be probably a visual survey. Would actually be someone having to stand on the street and visually count.
And how long does this camera count for? How many days do you leave it up?
The radars will give 24 hours. The MyoVision camera we can use, leave it out there for about 48. You know, and we've used this just an example. So in Hudson, if you've heard, there's an issue with the railroad stopping and blocking Hines Hill Road up there. So we put it out there for a couple days. Mm-hmm. So we could actually see how many times the train actually stopped and blocked the road. You know, so you can use it for creative infrastructure stuff. It's just, you know, all you need to do is let us know, and in a week we can probably get it out there, barring blizzard-like conditions or anything like that. The last thing I want to talk to you about, and this is a little bit different, or just, and we spent a little bit more time on it with TAC, is that, so one of the things when the feds came to us for our last review, they're really changing the way that they want our agencies to look at congestion. And so it's not just looking at a level of service. So, okay, it's a A, B, C, D, E, or F. What they're really interested right now is, it's called free flow speed, where they take cell phone data and they're looking at kind of what's the average time for someone to get from the beginning of the segment through the end of the segment. And then they look at, okay, what is, you know, at any point in day, at any point of the day or in peak hours or what have you, what is the speed that most people are going? Is it 80% of that free flow speed when traffic's moving? Is it 50%? The 14 corridor at times, so this data that we've pulled, is it's like 50% of the free flow speed. So if the free flow speed's 45, that would mean it's going, you know, 23 or something like that on average. And one of the things that we have to do as a region is decide what are our thresholds for those types of, like, what is congestion and that type of thing. We're not getting a lot of feedback from the feds because they want it to be, you know, based on the region. What's comfortable to us? And so one of the things that we're going to be doing is working with our TAC and kind of maybe taking going through some exercises to just show, hey, this is what the data is showing us. This is sort of what we're seeing. These are the areas that we know to be congested just by driving through them. And we're going to start using more and more of that data as we move forward. So we're starting to look at this data. We're kind of getting a new grasp on it because it is a different way of doing things. But it's something that you can see in real time as to, you know, okay, at 4:45 on October 15th in Streetsboro, this is what traffic did that day. You know, and you can pretty much pick any day, or you can have it averaged over over a full year, peak times, all that stuff. So, yeah, so there's a lot of good data out there that we're able to share with you guys as well. So that's something that you might start hearing a little bit more about. There might be some new terminology, and we're going to work through our TAC to sort of determine what we think is good for our region.
TAC, I'm not familiar with.
Excuse me, Mr. Barnes, he could explain that to you. This is a policy meeting, so if you have any questions, if you could save them to the end, I'd be happy to address you at that time, and we can explain. TAC is the Technical Advisory Committee of AMATS, but we can explain it to you later. All right, thank you. All right, are you done?
I am done, so okay. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
All right, moving on to Dave Poulet, AMATS Federal Funds Report.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to kind of add to what Curtis said. This little device that you have in your pocket is changing traffic engineering immensely. We also have another program called Streetlight, which they're trying to use the GPS in your cell phone and also the GPS in more modern cars to obtain ADTs instead of putting out counters. And it's just amazing technology. Now, how accurate it is, I don't know, but I think we're just on the horizon of a whole new way of evaluating traffic. But anyhow, on to the attachment 3C, the federal funds report. In the report, I state that since our last meeting in September, we haven't had any new projects that have sold. And unfortunately, after this went out, I did learn that there was a large resurfacing project in Graham Road, that in Silver Lake and Stowe, the Graham Road resurfacing project did just recently sell. But of course, that won't be the construction won't happen until early spring. There's a couple large projects scheduled to sell this month and for next: Cleveland Massman Road in Norton, and the Streetsboro Citywide Signal Upgrade. Hopefully those are still on schedule. We had a project review meeting November 9th at ODOT District 4. It was a very productive meeting. It was this meeting where I took the opportunity to move some of the resurfacing projects that we recently added to our project list. I had to move some of those further out in order to obtain fiscal constraint. And I chose those projects based on PCR and on ADTs. I didn't want to move anything out that, you know, had a 50 rating or, you know, or that was really, you know, desperately needed. So I would like to recommend that you still continue to develop your projects, and as finances allow, we'll try to move them back in the best we can. And that leads me on to the next topic, which is what Curtis also touched on. The MPOs have been notified that ODOT will reduce the discretionary portion of our funding by 6% beginning in fiscal year 2021. Now, I'd like to explain how our funding is set up. We have over $10 million that is guaranteed to us by federal formula. That's not being affected. That is what comes to us from the federal government based on population and a whole bunch of other factors. But then ODOT also goes above and beyond what is required and gives us another close to $1.5 million. And that $1.5 million is the amount that's going to be reduced. Now, 6% is really only about $90,000. But nevertheless, it's not the direction we want to go. But I'm very hopeful, and that maybe it'll be restored, or through another transportation bill, we can make up for it. So I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that'll begin in 2021. And ODOT is also reducing their own budget by 14%. And like Curtis alluded to, it's because of a lot of bond payments that are coming due. So, and it's not just AMATS, it's all the MPOs across the state. So, you know, as we hear more news about that, I'll be sure to let you know. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
And Dave, if I could just add, for those of you that know that, you know, there, there's always that threat of if we don't spend the money, we get penalized. Well, the penalty was always we were going to take discretionary money away. So now they're just taking it away anyway. So I'm not so sure if we need to worry so much. I mean, I think good project management is making sure we don't carry those big balances over. But I think that the threat of ODOT taking money away is now gone because they already did it. So they're doing it anyway. So just wanted to kind of come full circle with that program that they spent a lot of time creating.
Any other questions for Dave? All right, thank you, Dave. We're going to move on to old business. And is there any old business to bring before the body?
No.
Okay. Moving on to new business, the 3P public participation plan. Gary is going to take that away.
Thank you, Mayor. Attachment 5A is our draft public participation plan. This is an update of the plan that this committee approved back in 2015. The most significant item that was changed in this update was the inclusion of Appendix E, which is our language assistance plan for limited English proficient populations, or an LEP. We included an LEP at the urging of Federal Highway and Federal Transit Administration officials following our federal certification review in early 2017. At that time, the officials had high words of praise for AMATS with our public outreach strategies and approaches, especially with innovations such as our Bike and Brainstorm and Better Block events. But they encouraged that we do, as many other MPOs across the country are doing, and include this LEP. Now, what the LEP does is it outlines the steps and the procedures that we'll follow to provide language assistance for those persons for whom English is not their primary language. When we crafted our LEP, when we began updating the draft 3P in late July, we made the inclusion of the LEP a priority. We based our LEP on four factors that were issued as guidance from the U.S. Department of Transportation. And those factors were the number of LEP persons in the greater Akron area that are eligible or likely to encounter an AMATS-funded program, activity, or service. Also, the frequency with which LEP persons will encounter that program, activity, or service. And also the importance to that segment of the population. The fourth and final factor that we have to consider is the resources that are available to our agency and also the cost to us to provide such LEP assistance. We also based ours on what other MPOs are doing across the country in terms of an LEP, and we chose a broad selection to compare ourselves to, from larger MPOs such as the Houston-Galveston Area Council to smaller ones such as the other AMATS, the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Study. We believe that the LEP that we've created for our draft 3P conforms with Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and related Title VI regulations. We also believe that it complies with the Executive Order 13166, which was issued by then-President Clinton, that states that agencies such as ours must provide meaningful access to our programs and services for LEP persons. We've designed the 3P and our LEP to be living documents, and what I mean by that is our agency, we're not going to limit ourselves to only the procedures and practices we spell out in these documents in terms of public outreach. We're going to keep an eye out to see what other agencies and other council of governments are doing and what strategies seem to be working for them, and we might try to apply something here similar to what they're doing in the greater Akron area. We're also going to step up our game in terms of watching for opportunities to train the staff to learn better ways to accommodate LEP persons and other folks with special needs. Even though this is kind of off topic from the LEP, our agency will take steps to accommodate folks with special needs, as they say, have hearing disabilities, that type of thing. But we've been doing that for a number of years now. The draft 3P was available for a 45-day public comment period that began October the 12th and ended November the 26th. We also presented this item for public review and comment during last week's Citizens Involvement Committee meeting. At that time, the only comment we received was something that the members pointed out. The CIC no longer meets quarterly. They've timed their meetings to coincide on the same day that the Technical Advisory Committee meets, so now they're meeting six times a year. We promoted this availability of the draft 3P through various social media and the area's largest newspapers such as the Beacon, the Record Courier, the Reporter, and also the Cuyahoga Falls News Press. Last week, the Technical Advisory Committee recommended that the Policy Committee approve the draft 3P, and we are asking for an approval of this item today. If you folks have any questions regarding this item, I'll do the best I can to answer them.
Are there any questions?
I do have a question.
Yes, Mr. Harris.
The training you talked about for staff would be open to for any of us on
the
Oh, certainly.
Because I deal with Title VI, so I'm kind of interested in what you're saying.
Well, that door flows both ways. If you could let me know of an opportunity that where we could attend something, I'd really appreciate it.
All right.
All right,
can I get a motion? Let me get a motion, and then we'll ask enough. We'll go back to that. Motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All items.
Any other questions? You're good? Can we just make the motion? Okay. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you, Carrie and
you.
Staff. You guys did a great job on this.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to go to Dave Toulet once again, and this is on the 2015-17 traffic crash report. Mr. Toulet.
Okay, thank you. Today I'll be presenting under attachment 5B, the 2015-2017 MS crash report. Some of the things I want to touch on during my presentation is trends, high crash sections and intersections, bicycle and pedestrian safety, performance measures, which is a relatively new thing we have to, a new requirement that the feds mandated, and then we'll touch on the ODOT safety program. Looking at just crashes, the last 3 years have been relatively stable. The crashes fluctuated a little bit. We had 411 additional crashes, but in the whole scheme of things, that's really not too many. The red line on top is thousands of daily vehicle miles traveled, and it's kind of interesting to see that in 16, both the vehicle miles traveled and the number of crashes dipped a little bit, and then in 17, they both went back up a little bit. Applying a trend line to the crashes, a trend line is something that is used to gauge what's happening over a long period of time. It's relatively flat. It's maybe increasing just a little bit. Now, this year, I'm actually introducing something new. We don't want to just look only at crashes, but we also want to look at number of injuries and fatalities. Now, a crash is one event, but a crash can involve
three, four, five, however many vehicles, and each vehicle could have several occupants. So you could have one crash, which is one event, but you could have maybe six injuries resulting from that crash. Unfortunately, there was an incident pretty close to here where a car ran off the road and hit a pole. It was one crash, but unfortunately, four fatalities resulted from that. So, looking at the trend for injury crashes and injuries, this is injury crashes, and then this is the resulting injuries. Both of those have decreased a little bit, so that's good news. And then if you took the injuries and you sorted out serious injuries, both serious injury crashes and serious injuries have been going down. So that's more good news. Unfortunately, fatalities have not been doing so well. And this is not just in our area, but it's also statewide and nationwide. We had a couple more fatal crashes, and then we also had several more fatalities. So we're not exactly sure why this is happening, but it does seem to be a trend. The good news is in 2018, and I don't have the 2018 data yet, I've heard that in 2018, things are starting to fatalities are starting to decrease. So hopefully the next crash report will show that. Briefly, the way we do our crash report is we download the data from ODOT. The data has coordinates with it, and then we plot the crashes in GIS, and then we do a lot of checking. We check them for accuracy, and we also find a lot of them where it's just obvious the crash is not plotted right, it's in the middle of a lake or in the middle of a field somewhere. So we do a lot of checking to make sure that we have things where they should be. And then crashes within 250 feet of an intersection is usually an intersection-related crash, but we also check those to make sure that that we have intersections and non-intersection crashes sorted out properly. And then once we have everything sorted out, we try to come up with a list of high crash sections and intersection. A high crash section has 10 crashes per mile per year and a crash rate of 1. A high crash intersection has 10 crashes over the 3-year period and a crash rate of 1. Then we take them and we rank, once we sort out the high crash areas, we rank them based on a composite score. A composite score takes into account not just number of crashes, but also the crash severity and the crash rate. And the crash rate takes into account the traffic that goes through that point. So with this year's crash report, there were 179 high crash sections. The number one section was State Route 59, East Main Street in Kent. This section always did kind of hover near the top, but during the last several years, Summit Street has been closed, and I think that put an additional number of cars over on East Main Street because it's parallel. And plus the college, you have a lot of younger drivers, and it's almost the perfect storm, but I'm quite confident that Kent is aware of this, and they are planning to do studies and hopefully safety improvements. There were 316 intersections in this crash report. Two top intersections, I thought this was unusual, were in Akron, and they were next to each other. It was South Maple and Rose, and South Maple and Cedar Street.
And the one thing that you don't see on this picture is this is a hill. This is a pretty steep hill. And when I took a closer look at these, red light running was the number one cause of these crashes. So, and then there was also construction on Cedar. So I'm hoping that perhaps we can take a closer look at these and make some improvements there. Freeways are done by ODOT in the central office. They take the freeway system, divide it into rural and urban, and then they take tenth of a mile sections. It's really hard to describe these sections because it can be a tenth mile section that's kind of in the middle of nowhere. So we plotted the sections that came up high on the on map 5-3. I think we had 10. We had 10 in our area that were in the top 50. And there was one on Route 8 near Glenwood that was, I think, 7th in the entire state. But we just used the ODOT analysis for freeways. Moving on to bicycle and pedestrian crashes, there's some unique characteristics of these crashes. First of all, they have a high percentage of injuries. 79% and 83% respectively. They're more random and spread out. It's hard to say this is the highest crash intersection for bikes or this is a high crash segment. The only thing that I can conclude is they're proportional to the population. So the denser the population, the more these you seem to have. Many of them involve younger people. And many times because of this, they may not be aware of some of the rules they need to follow. And these type of crashes, I believe, can be improved with education. I think education is very effective, especially with children, teaching them how to ride more safely. Bike crashes went up a little bit, but as you can see, we're still considerably below where we were. We had a few more bike crashes and injuries, but fortunately, no fatalities in 2017. One new thing that hopefully will help in the future is House Bill 154 was the 3-foot rule, and this states that when passing a bicycle, you should maintain at least 3 feet. So hopefully this will make it a little safer for bicycles on the road. 66% of bike crashes happen at intersections. The number one type of crash was a car hitting a bike. Many times the bike didn't stop when it was supposed to, or vice versa, but most of the time it was the bike, when you read the report, either ran a red light or a stop sign. A lot of these happened in residential areas where it was just a stop sign and the bicyclist just didn't stop. Then the second most common type is the bike actually hitting the car. And then the third most common intersection crash involving bicycles was a car turning left in front of the bicycle. And that's because of the narrow profile, and especially if the lighting conditions are not good, it's sometimes hard to see a bicyclist when they're coming right at you. They also happen on segments. The most common type of crash, bicycle crash on a segment, occurred at driveways. I'm sure that all of us have been in a hurry and backed out and maybe looked for traffic but didn't look too close enough to see a bike or pedestrian. And then this type is the second most common on segments where the bike gets hit from behind. And then, of course, the side swipe. So hopefully the new 3-foot rule will help with those two. Moving on to pedestrians, pedestrian crashes are going in the right direction. They decreased some, both number of crashes and injuries, but unfortunately, a couple more fatalities, two additional fatalities in 17 with pedestrians. For the longest time, I've noticed that pedestrian crashes tend to peak in October, and I was always curious why, so I took a closer look, and I noticed that I thought perhaps it was at the end of the month around Halloween when you have a lot of kids out in the streets and conditions are dark and such, but I didn't find that. It just, I think it's just kids, the weather's still nice, school is starting, and I think a big factor is the days are shorter, mornings are darker, and it's really tough to see pedestrians sometimes. They have dark clothing on, and, you know, with a bike, at least a bike might have a reflector on it, but a pedestrian sometimes just, it's just so hard to see them. So I think it was just a combination of conditions why we have this peak here, mainly back to school and shorter light hours of light. Safety performance measures. This was the new federal requirement. We have to measure number of fatalities per million vehicle miles traveled, serious injuries per million vehicle miles, and a number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. Unfortunately, the two measurements that involved fatalities didn't fare too well. We were up a little bit, but three of them, that the ones that involved injuries, serious injuries, we came down in. So we did good in three of the five requirements. And the way this is calculated is we average 5 years of data, and as time goes on, we take 5 years. We add a year and drop a year, and we keep averaging 5 years, and we compare it to that original 5 years. Dave, so in case there was some anomaly, that it kind of averages out. Yes.
Number of fatalities. Is that the total fatalities or fatal incidents?
No, that's number of fatalities.
So if you have the four people from one.
Yes. So that's what we, that's how we calculate this number of fatalities. So unfortunately, for some reason, it was just a tough year. 17, the last couple years just haven't been too good, not just in our area, but statewide and nationwide, I think. But I believe 18, we're going to see the trend reversed.
Well, you can look at this. You see the number of serious injuries is down 10%,
yes.
But your fatalities are up.
Yes.
And kind of what that says is that the car accidents are much more survivable now with all the airbags.
Yes.
And that when you do have a fatal accident, it's got to be a pretty horrendous crash.
Yes, I agree. And fatalities, fatal crashes have a lot of things in common. Many times it's a single vehicle, late at night, drugs and alcohol is involved, and many of them don't wear seatbelts. Many of the people involved in these fatalities are not wearing seatbelts, but fatalities kind of have a lot of common characteristics. Many of them are single cars, one car. That's just, there's nothing that you could probably engineer to prevent it. Yes,
question. Do you have statistics on motorcycle?
Yeah, that was my next question. Do you track individual motorcycle accidents?
I could. I don't in this presentation, but I could. I know for sure those are up a little bit. And
do they count the fatalities?
What's that?
Do they count in the fatalities?
If it's a fatal motorcycle accident.
But is it counted as, and like, we have number of fatalities up 7%. Does that include any motorcycle fatalities in there?
Yes, it does. And I think if you look at ages, the people getting into motorcycle accidents are,
okay,
you would think they would be younger people, but they're actually people my age, in their 50s. People are retiring.
Yeah.
The kids are gone. People are retiring. They have a little extra money, so they go out and buy a motorcycle. But they don't have the skills that they had when they did it when they were 20. But, yeah.
Well, they don't have people turning left in front of them or talking on their phone either.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave,
anything else on the report?
Yeah, actually, I have a couple more slides real quick. The safety, ODOT safety program. I feel very fortunate to be working with Safety in Ohio. They have one of the best safety programs in the nation. Over $100 million available for safety projects, studies, safety projects. Applications are due in the central office by April 30th and September 30th. So I'm hoping that if there's something you feel, a location you feel real strong about, there's a chance that you could actually have it apply in April if you wanted to really hustle and get it done. Funding is available for design, right-of-way, and construction, and the local match is 10%. It's really a good deal. This is just something that I always kind of wanted to look at, so I thought I'd show it to you. What I did was I took the age of people in accidents, and then I took the age of all the drivers in our AMATS area. And I reduced it to a percentage. I had to reduce it to a percentage to kind of compare the two. And the red graph, the red is age of driver one, which is usually the driver at fault. I couldn't look at every report. And then the blue bars is the age of licensed drivers in Summit and Portage counties. Now, getting back to our number one segment in Kent. Most of those drivers, college students, fall in this age group. And look, they are responsible for 18.5% of the accidents, but they're only 8% of the drivers. So I thought that was interesting. And then as you get further out, you can see that the drivers seem to get a little safer. But then I was surprised out here at the end. You know, I hear a lot of news about how dangerous senior drivers are, and I don't know. I expected this out here to look something like this, but it didn't. So I just threw this in, just kind of for general interest. This is another graph where I compare the green is the state, and the red is the U.S., and the blue is the AMATS area. And what this shows is the state and the U.S. are very close together, but, you know, we're kind of a little bit ahead of the curve. I think our senior tsunami is going to hit a little sooner than the rest of the country.
Thanks for reminding me.
Right now.
But it's really not a making guy feel good.
Those are the good drivers. I mean that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think it's something to keep in mind when designing. Roads and signs and pavement markings and lighting and things like that. But I'm not saying that just because you're older, if you're not necessarily a worse driver. I'm just saying that, our area is just a little bit ahead of the curve. And I kind of suspected that truthfully. So Anyhow, that concludes my presentation. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Yes.
Dave, you track this annually, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you, for my application, you have 17 here. Do you have 16 broken out by itself and 15 broken out by itself? I'm particularly interested in the intersection and the segment crashes. And if you know, don't necessarily have to do it here, but if you could you email me the 14 statistics, the 15, the 16 in a 1 year segment? I'd like to compare. Well, what I'm trying to do is compare if we've actually, with all the programs that we've had, if we're actually getting safer, and see if my intersections have gone down or the crash rate has gone down or something. You know.
Are you interested in our whole area?
Or no, I'm just interested in me.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Yeah, we could definitely do that pretty easily.
Unfortunately, what's happening is, yes, we're making highways safer, but drivers are getting worse.
Well, what I mean, Dave, is you have this ranking here, 1 to 350.
Yes.
Okay, I would really like to see how we are ranked in the intersections, but at the same time, I would like to see if we have gone down in any of the ranking. Like if I had an intersection was number 15, did it drop to 25 this year?
Okay.
Because that would indicate to me that either somebody's having a lot more accidents or we've gotten safer.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do that.
Could you email it to me, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Because the problem is with the 3 years, sometimes it's like all it is a year drops off, so an intersection looks better. But really, it's just because the horse year dropped off.
But he says he tracks them annually.
Right, so we can do it annually, too. Yeah. So we can get that for you, sure.
I knew you could.
Yeah. Just a comment, if there's any interest in more information about fatalities, if you are interested in that, I assume we have the same group in Summit County that we do in Portage County. In Portage County, we have a Safe Communities group, and we have a Fatal Accident Review Committee that meets usually on about a quarterly basis, and we go over all the fatals that occur in Portage County. And it's got law enforcement, some of the court people, et cetera. And it's a pretty thorough analysis of it, and they always do comparison to prior data. So if you ever have any of that interest in that, try to tap into your Safe Communities group, and we like I said, we have about four times a year we meet and go over that stuff.
Mickey, the trends that Dave was kind of talking about, does that fall in line with what you've seen on that?
I was going to say that, you know, I've been involved for a while now, and it's crazy, but in Portage County the numbers are
jumping. You don't see it.
They
jump.
They just there's no consistent pattern.
Yeah.
This year, I think our fatals went down, but we had a high number last the prior
year.
So and it's hard to when you look at data that small, it's hard to make meaningful comparisons or contrasts or whatever.
Well, and I wonder how many times do you just come to the conclusion that it was sort of bad actors versus the infrastructure?
I have to be honest and tell you what Dave said about the statistics relative to the fatal accident. He's right on the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, almost every one of them in our county, you could at least draw three of those parameters.
Yeah.
And every one of them. No seatbelt, run off the road, high speed, and alcohol. Yeah. That's about 90% of the fatals.
Go ahead.
I'll back up what Mickey said, because in Portage, people tell me that we drive a lot faster than anywhere else. Not that we don't have the freeway system, so there's a lot of intersections, there's a lot of stuff even coming off our hills that there is no warning at all. And we do have a lot of motorcycles.
Unfortunately, we don't have 500 miles of state highways in Portage County. There are a lot of rural ones, and they don't have the same run-off-the-road pattern characteristics that a lot of the state highways do. And if you go off the road at a high rate of speed, that's usually a bad scenario.
Somebody mentioned earlier the cars are safer. They are if you're buckled in and don't get thrown out the window.
And if you're not boost up.
And we have very safety features on our cars, too.
I've spent my career as a funeral director, and that is the worst thing, to have to deal with the family. Yeah. Is something as simple as a seatbelt might have made it a survival crash.
Stay off the cell phone.
Yeah. All right.
Move to approve the traffic report.
Second?
Second.
All right. Are there any other questions? Dave, that was a great report. It was very thorough. Thank you so much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Motion carries.
And if anybody else, like Mayor Brasco, does want individual community by year, just let us know and we'll distribute that. So.
Okay. We're going to move on, and it's Dave Pillay. Resolution 2018-21, approving amendment number 13 to the Transportation Improvement Program.
Carrying his money.
To add three new projects, revise funding to one existing project, and cancel one existing project.
Okay, thank you. Amendment 13 does add three new projects, revise funding to one project, and cancels an existing project. One of the new projects we're adding is Medina Line Road resurfacing. Medina Line Road and roads on boundaries are always kind of hard to deal with as far as who's responsible. So this is how the meeting of the minds divided up Medina Line Road. And this section down here is Norton's maintenance responsibility. And this is the section where we're adding construction is scheduled in fiscal year 2020. The next project is just a study. It's Boston Mills Road up in Boston Heights Township. It's a study to try to figure out what to do where areas along the road are slipping. That is scheduled in fiscal year 2019. The next new project is in downtown Akron. It's Main Street corridor phase two. Currently, this phase one is under construction, and this is adding this section up here between Mill and State Route 59. It'll be done after phase one is completed. That phase one is actually under construction right now, and then the project that we're adding, revising funding to is, it's not a new project, it's Cleveland Maslin Road in Fairlawn. It's adding $3 million in CMAQ funding. The CMAQ funding was approved way back in December of 17, but this is just adding it, officially adding it to the project because I thought we would develop a new TIP this past fall, but we didn't. So it's going to require more amendments now to get these projects in the current TIP. And the project that we're canceling is in Hudson. It's the intersection of State Route 91 and 303. The council decided not to pursue this project, and funding will just go, the area is not losing the funding, it will just go back to try to alleviate some of the red ink we have in fiscal year 20 and 21. So those are the projects on in Amendment 13. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve.
For a second?
Second.
Are there any further questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Our last order of business is the 2019 AMATS meeting calendar.
Yeah, so in the back of your packet is the 2019 meeting calendar. All policy and TAC meetings will be held in this building. They have been confirmed. All we are asking for is for a motion to approve the calendar for next year.
And that the annual meeting is October 11th, so right. Mark your calendars.
So moved.
Second.
Any other questions on this? Any questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Well, it was a great year, everybody. I think a lot of good stuff happened, and your staff is to be commended, always Curtis, and everyone have a happy holiday, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever you...